Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron. Go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Get every episode for free right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. John says, I am sure you have seen the story about Tepper stopping at Dilworth Neighborhood Bar and Grill about the sign they had out front. I think the fact that Tepper stopped to speak to the manager about the sign kind of proves the point of the sign. Okay. All right. I just heard this story at the top of the hour news. I will look into it a little bit more and bring it back. We'll circle back like Jen Psaki would do. But because I just read this email, I feel like I need to just give you some background real quick. Apparently, the owner of the Carolina Panthers, David Tepper, saw a sign on one of the restaurants, the neighborhood bar and grill. It's right up the street here. And it's, maybe 10 blocks away from the Bank of America Stadium. So he apparently sees the sign that says something like, let the coaches pick and the general manager make the draft picks. Like, leave him alone. Because this has been the rumor that Tepper's, like, got his fingers all in all of the pies. Is that how that works? Fingers in the pie? Okay. But, he's micromanaging. That's been the rumor. And I don't know if that's true or not, but he saw this sign, and he apparently went into the place and wanted to speak to the manager who's responsible for putting up the sign. Which, to John's point in the email, does kind of prove the point. All right, I'll look into the story. I don't know. All I heard was the newscast there, part of the story at the top of the hour news, but we'll see. All right, so we've got all of these encampments going up at the colleges. Their little Maoist struggle sessions are underway. And speaking of tents and encampments, came across this story at the McClatchy paper up in Raleigh, the News and Observer. Headline, we don't call them tents. We call them homes. Homeless encampment near Garner evicted. Outside her tent, Brandy stands near a Spectra breast pump box. She's 7 months pregnant with a baby girl and homeless. Quote, we're just trying to survive, she said Tuesday morning. We just need help. They'd rather put us out than help us. What are we supposed to do? So she declined to give her last name. She says she's been homeless, though, for 2 years and has lived in what they were calling the Welcome to Garner encampment, because it was set up right next to the sign that says Welcome to Garner, which I'm sure the town of Garner was very happy to welcome people with their sign and that image. But she said she's been at this encampment for 6 months. She is 7 months pregnant. She was one of the first people to take up residence in a small patch of land and trees at the intersection of Highways 70 and 401 in the NCDOT right-of-way. She was one of the first people to be there. At the border of Garner and Raleigh, the camp has now grown to more than a dozen tents, drawing complaints from some Wake County residents. And last week, the Raleigh Police Department put up notices on the trees that you got to be out by this week. So keep in mind what this woman who starts off the story, Brandy, and by the way, there is a formula here in case you haven't ever noticed this. They teach this to you in journalisming school where, you start off with sort of this access point into a story. Like the story here is that they got a homeless problem, right? at this site, right? This and at a larger, you know, scale. But they go to this one site where the people that are in the tents and such along the side of the road at this intersection, they've been camped out and now they're being told to move. So that's the story. But you enter the story through the story of Brandy. And this is done all the time. And most stories that I read now start with something like this, a personalized story, right? Same thing happens, by the way, if you're doing a national or international story. The first thing that you are taught to do is to, quote, localize that story, right? So if there's protests going on all over the college world, and you got pro-Palestine, pro-Hamas people camping out, what do? You run up to a local college to find out, you guys doing the same thing. You localize that story. The other part of this also is that you end your story, particularly in television, you end your story with the punch, with the thing that you want the audience to walk away remembering. You get the best soundbite, tearjerker or, somehow powerful motivation, whatever it is, but you get that last soundbite and you hit that thing to close out the story. So you have left that soundbite in the audience's mind. And therein lies, by the way, sort of the tell for bias, right? If you're kind of curious what you think, or if you're curious what the reporter thinks is the most important piece of information that you should take away from it and the feeling that they want to convey to you, it's in that last soundbite. That's what they want you to walk away thinking. And that's so you can detect the bias by listening or reading the very last sentence. Let's see here. What are they? I haven't even done this. Let's see. Here we go. Shortly before 10 a.m., Brandy was still, this is the final paragraph of this story. Brandy was still packing up her stuff, the tent and the rest of her belongings laid out nearby. She was not sure where she would go, but said she didn't want to be arrested. Quote, I'm beyond excited to be pregnant, but I'm just sad I have to bring her into this world like this. But it's the world we live in. There you go. Right? That's the punch, right? Now, she says they'd rather put the very first paragraph. She says they would rather put us out than help us. Is that true? Is that true? I would submit, no, it's not true. Because in the rest of the report, you actually have these kind of mentions that are just kind of done in passing about all the different people that are there from these different organizations that are offering services and help and all this. So here's the statement from the NCDOT. They said over the past 2 weeks, law enforcement has deemed the area unsafe due to a recent increase in criminal activity. So, okay, criminal activity. I don't know what that means. I don't know what kind of crimes, but does that sound like people who are not trying to help? So you're saying that we should just allow it to continue and for the people that are in the camp to be victimized as it gets bigger, right? Because when it was just Brandy, when she was one of the first ones there, there was only a couple people. I imagine crime would be pretty low. It's just two or three people, right? But as you start getting more and more people coming to this camp, now you have an increase in crime. You got more people. And then you have targets. In March, the police department's ACORNS unit, which has social workers and officers and takes a care and safety first, enforcement last approach, they held three outreach sessions with the people in the camp. ACORNS has also coordinated and conducted visits with a rapid responder outreach team. Quote, the people in the encampment have consistently declined services. Okay, so does that sound like people who would rather put you out than help you? They've literally offered you help, and you've declined. The offers have been declined. Alrighty. So back to this News and Observer story about the encampment in Garner, right at the Welcome to Garner sign. It's on the border of Raleigh. And the NCDOT that owns the right-of-way there, where the encampment was being set up, they had notices put up, and they were like, you got to get out of there. There's Raleigh Police Department was like, there's been an increase in crime. And so they go in, and they have all these different service providers that offer up help, and nobody takes them up on the offers. Nicole Reynolds is quoted in the piece. She lost her home during the COVID-19 pandemic and was living in a Cary hotel. But then the hotel raised the room rates ahead of the recent Dreamville Festival. I've never heard of Dreamville. Is that a game? Dreamville? Is it like a hallucinogenic kind of dance party kind of thing? I don't know. But they raised the rates on the rooms because they had this concert coming to town. And so obviously they could rent out the rooms for much more. And so that's when she moved to the encampment. She knows several homeless people who are staying in hotels that were in the hotels before the festival, even before the higher rates. She said it could easily cost $100 a day to stay in one of these low-cost motels or hotels, which is like $3,000 a month. And she says, quote, it's really expensive being poor. Yeah, $3,000 a month. Like a one-bedroom apartment in Charlotte is $1,400 on average. But that's a one-bedroom. But you're living in a hotel, a low-cost hotel, for $3,000? She says, I have 3 degrees. I don't even know what to make of that. Right, like the first thing, like, in what? What are your degrees in? From where, you know? She said, I have 3 degrees. My teeth have started falling out. I'm born and raised in this city, and I can't find any help. All the people think you did something to get here, that you've done something. Oh, you've got to be on drugs. No, I didn't do anything but pay my rent. All I need is a couch. Just a couch. Again, service providers came in and offered assistance, and they say they were declined. So they're offered help, they refuse the help, and then they tell the media, all I want is help. And by help, I mean a couch, which I'm assuming is a couch inside a domicile, right? Inside a shelter of some kind. It can't just be just a couch that she has to now like carry around or something out on the streets, obviously. She doesn't explain what the degrees are in. She doesn't explain why her teeth are falling out. She just says that she lost her home during the COVID pandemic. How? What was the story there? And I'm not trying to blame her or anything, but if you're going to hold up these cases in these stories, right, you're going to present this person's story to me so I am now sympathetic in order to do what? Well, as the last line of the story says, I'm just sad I have to bring my child into this world, but it's the world we live in, right? So there is sort of an implicit call to action there. Like, we need to do something to fix the world we live in. Is okay, but how? When you have people that are actually trying to offer people help and they are refused. They're not taking the help. This ties into the Supreme Court, because this week they heard oral arguments in the Grants Pass case. That's a town out in Oregon, and they put in a bunch of rules that homeless advocates are trying to criminalize homelessness. Right, let me get Mike on here before his connection drops off for like the seventh time. Mike, welcome to the program. Hello, Mike.
Hey,
what's
how's
up?
How's it going?
Good, man. What's up?
I used to listen to Neil Bortz, and I know this doesn't apply to all of the homeless, but he used to say all the time, and I firmly believe it, is that homelessness is a choice.
For a lot of people,
I think a lot of those people, they don't want a job. There's an old Andy Griffith thing with that, where a homeless guy comes in and he gets all the kids to do the Robin Hood thing for him, And then Andy goes out and tells him, hey, we'll give you a state job. Oh, my leg bothers me. And he says, oh, well, we'll get you an office job. And next thing you know, the guy's running off into the woods. And the kids are like, boy, he can run fast with that bad leg of his. And he's, you know, typical thing. They don't want a job. They want a handout. They don't want to take care of a house. I get a kick out of when you see them on the street, and right across the street is something that says, help wanted.
Mm.
No, I would shovel manure to keep my house. Actually, I have shoveled manure to keep my house.
I've shoveled manure at my house, and I didn't even get paid for it. It's just to make the shrubs look good.
Just that whole. It's nothing like seeing an able-bodied one, and the veteran ones that say they're veterans, they're not filling out the right forms. Because if they are a veteran, there are places that they can go and get help.
Well, hang on.
Be right away.
Right, but that's the thing. Like, they may have filled out the forms, and maybe they even got into those facilities. But if we've got a wave of asylum seekers, the newcomers, the migrants coming in, then they may actually get kicked out of their housing in order to make room for the newcomers. So
getting me started with that one.
Right, I appreciate the call, Mike. Have a great weekend. Mike is correct, and this is not the case for every single homeless person, obviously, but there are a great many of them who have made a choice. It's not the choice you or I would make. We have different priorities. We prefer different things. And they are willing to do without some of the things that we are not willing to do without. One of the reasons why a lot of folks don't go into shelters and such is because the shelters have rules in order to protect the people in the shelters, not just the people who are seeking shelter, but those who work in the shelter as well. And a lot of folks do not care to go into those shelters because of the rules. Grants Pass is in Oregon, Southwest Oregon town. It's got about 38,000 people, and they have as many as 600 experiencing homelessness, or the unhoused. I don't even know what it's called anymore, but this is from John Sexton, writing at hotair.com. It was a 2.5-hour oral argument in this case at the Supreme Court. The consensus seems to be that a majority of the justices are leaning towards siding with the town, Grants Pass, which got sued by homeless people. Wrap your head around that one for a second. Right? Really, you found some attorneys to file some litigation for you in order to take a case all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Interesting. Okay. Naturally, the case seems to have divided the justices along partisan lines. Throughout the more than 2-hour argument, the court's three liberal justices were more skeptical of laws passed by the city that they suggested criminalize the most basic of human needs. Justice Elena Kagan told the attorney representing the city that its laws go well beyond the need to clear encampments from public spaces. Quote, sleeping is a biological necessity. Sleeping in public is kind of like breathing in public. Like breathing. Okay. I got some follow-up questions on that one. I'll come back. Several conservative justices who make up a majority of the court suggested that policymakers and not judges should be setting the local rules for dealing with homeless people. Chief Justice John Roberts asked the Biden administration's lawyer why, these 9 people, the judges, are the right ones to weigh these policy judgments. And Sexton says that the key to making sense of this case is that it's not really about Grants Pass. The decision of the 9th Circuit Court of Appeals is being applied to all of the states covered by the 9th Circuit, right? Which in turn includes big cities like San Francisco, Los Angeles, Portland, Seattle.
And it is those cities that are dealing with the bulk of the crisis, and they have appealed to the Supreme Court to clarify the ruling of the Ninth Circuit so they can have some control over their own streets and parks. They've come in support of Grants Pass. This case, though, is a it builds off of a prior ruling, which is Robinson versus California. It goes back to 1962 that struck down a California law that made it a crime to be addicted to the use of narcotics. That was against the law. If you're addicted to narcotics, you're breaking the law. Okay? The Robinson ruling was that the government cannot make it a crime to simply be something. And I think that makes sense, right? But here's the thing. The court does not, it allows the state or the city to punish behavior, right? So the issue in Grants Pass is that the city enacted a whole bunch of these ordinances that do not explicitly ban being homeless. It just bans all of these things that essentially bans homelessness, right? It bans behaviors like having a blanket, you know, walking around sleeping with a blanket or something in a park. The plaintiffs of the unhoused residents, they argue that the city enacted so many restrictions that it is inevitable that they will eventually violate one of the ordinances, and that amounts to an effective ban on the status of being homeless. Now, nobody is arguing that the cities or states should be able to criminalize the fact that you don't have a house, okay? The question is whether or not you can criminalize the behavior, especially if you are homeless voluntarily rather than involuntarily. For example, if San Francisco offers a homeless person living in a tent camp a bed in a shelter, and that person refuses to accept it, and that happens every single day, like I just told you what happened up in Garner, North Carolina. So in that scenario, is the city still helpless to remove that person from a sidewalk? Right? We've given you the opportunity to get off the street and you refuse. Does the city now have a right to move you off the street? Cities have been unwilling to push this boundary, but the Supreme Court could clarify that these rules only apply, for example, like if it's an involuntarily homeless person, for those where there's no alternative bed available. But then this also raises other questions. For example, what if the next town over has a bed? Right? What if they're willing to drive you to the next town over or put you on buses and drive you to the next state where there are beds, right? How about this, though? Regarding the, sleeping in public is just like breathing. How about pooping in public? Is that like breathing too? Or how about lighting fires? How about that? It's like half of all of the fires in cities like Portland and Seattle, like that's half of all their fires. Seattle, they respond to 5 homeless camp fires every day. It's like breathing. Okay, if you're listening to this podcast, you are obviously paying attention to the world around us. You also have really great taste, I might add. But if you haven't started getting prepared for various emergencies, I gotta ask, what are you waiting for? Please call my friends Bill and Jan at Carolina Readiness Supply, and they'll help get you started. If you have no idea how to start, they can help you. If you're an experienced prepper, they can help you too. Being prepared is just smart. We've already established that you're smart. I mean, you listen to this podcast after all. So let's put those smarts into action. Go to CarolinaReadiness.com. That's CarolinaReadiness.com or call them at 828-226-7239. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies as well as educational materials that you're going to need for any kind of emergency. Veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out? Email is Pete at thepetecalendarshow.com. Dan has an email that says, Pete, I think you're onto something here. Pooping and peeing are every bit as much a natural body function as breathing and sleeping. That said, is the Supreme Court Justice Elena Kagan implying that doing any or all of the above in public is simply okie dokie? I don't think so. And Chuck says, Pete, the least we could do, this is homeless with 3 degrees. Oh, yeah, the woman in the article, homeless with 3 degrees. She says the least we could do is pay her college debt. I mean, gosh, it's not that difficult. Yeah, I mean, right? Why not? Let me see if I can find some of the... hang on a second. This is from SCOTUSblog.com. Amy Howe, writing at the SCOTUS blog, which is a good blog if you are interested in like getting in. Like, these are lawyers, and they do deep dives into the arguments and stuff. Here we go. Elena Kagan compare. Oh, wait, let me start it. Let me start here. Justice Sonia Sotomayor noted that the city's ordinances only apply to homeless people who sleep in public. Police officers in Grants Pass, she suggested, don't arrest others who fall asleep in public with blankets. For example, babies with blankets. Really? Right, because it's the same thing. Like, this is... Or people who are stargazing. Really? Who does that anymore? I mean, you know, if somebody goes out there and they throw out a blanket and they're going to sit on the blanket and look up at the sky. First off, light pollution. You probably can't even see the stars. Second of all, they're probably just looking at their phones, right? When's the last time you saw people, like, throw out a blanket and do stargazing? Not counting the eclipse, okay? Not counting the eclipse. Next up, Elena Kagan compared sleeping in public for people who are homeless and have nowhere else to go to, quote, breathing in public. And Ketanji Brown Jackson said it seems cruel and unusual to, so violation of the Eighth Amendment, to punish people for acts like sleeping, which constitute basic human needs. Chief Justice John Roberts seemed to suggest that because someone who is homeless can instantly become not homeless, homelessness is not a status. Like being addicted to drugs from the Robinson v. California case. Justice Alito indicated that although status is different from conduct, there are some instances of conduct that are closely tied to status. Or if homelessness is defined as simply lacking a place to stay in a particular night, then they basically amount to the same thing. The lawyer Corcoran here, Corcoran is for Grants Pass, I believe. Assured Amy Coney Barrett that public urination and defecation would not violate the Eighth Amendment under the challenger's theory. Or no, this is the, sorry, challenger. Deputy Solicitor General Edwin Needler argued on behalf of the Biden administration that filed a friend of the court brief supporting the challengers. And then Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts, posed a series of hypotheticals to test the scope of the government's theory. So if a town next to Grants Pass built a new shelter that has many vacant beds, would there still be a right to sleep on the streets in Grants Pass? What if a police officer offered people who are homeless in Grants Pass a ride to a shelter 30 miles away? Justice Alito then asked Needler, who again was representing the Biden administration, how cops would implement such a rule on a day-to-day basis. What if there's a question? Right, about whether shelter beds are actually available or not. And if so, how many beds are available? What if a shelter won't allow people who are homeless to bring their dogs? Or people with mental health issues are not allowed, right? Needler acknowledged that the court faced what he called line-drawing problems. Like, where do you draw the line? Oh, okay, good. I'm glad we all acknowledge that this is the challenge, right? Corcoran sought to assuage the justice's concerns about some of those line-drawing problems, emphasizing that the focus should be on physical and legal access to shelter. If somebody who is homeless turns down a place at a shelter because the shelter's no pets policy, she said, they do not have an Eighth Amendment claim under the challenger's theory. So there you go. So if you offer the shelter bed and they're like, I can't go because I've got this dog, and I have this dog because it gets me more money when I'm out panhandling, and that is true, right? Dogs, I mean, I'm not saying they don't love their pets. I'm not saying that it's not a companion to them and whatever, but they do get you more money. People feel bad for the dog. They give you the money, and then, you know, you go buy your alcohol or you buy your drugs or whatever. You give a cut to the person that owns the corner,
because that's part of this whole deal too, right? There are corners, like there's territory involved here. That's why you never see people fighting over the same corner.
All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.